Welcome to Ex Libris On Air and the stories behind the stories of today's literature and their authors.
Greetings for Ex Libris On Air. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Of Ships and Sailors, and joining me from Florida is the author, Dr. Bruce K. Bunker. Welcome to the program, sir.
It's good to be here.
You're also captain. I'm seeing from the notes here. You started out in the Navy as a pilot, if I do remember or do understand.
Marines. I was in the Marines.
Marines. Pilot. A Marine pilot. Okay.
Yep.
What threw me was I was seeing an aircraft carrier, and because of my lack of knowledge about the military in its entirety, I just assumed. So you started off as a pilot and then migrated or segued into the medical field. How did that come about?
Well, I got to my end of obligated service in the Marine Corps, and I decided to go back to medical school, and that happened. So luck, skill, being crazy, I guess.
I can relate to some of that. You mentioned the Gulf War. You were involved in that. It was 1990, I think, around that time frame.
Actually, the Gulf War is one of the backdrops of the book. Basically, I reported forestall CV-59 in July of 1990. The Gulf War kicked off a month later, about the 2nd of August. But our whole schedule changed, and the whole world became very crazy for their period in there, including the Gulf War. We actually never made it to the Gulf War. We got to the Med and were working our way through it. I did want to note that right now we've got the Ford over in the Med, and we got Ike is going through the Straits sooner or later to work over there as well. And this is a process that we keep doing all the time to keep aircraft carriers in the Med for deployments.
Wow. You've managed to pen 404 pages. Was this a time I know it's a time-consuming event, but what was the motivation behind that? What did you want to share that may have been directly associated with your time in the military or some other information you felt was necessary to share?
I copied this guy named Terry Riley, Captain Terry Riley, who was a senior medical officer in Forestall before I did. He wrote a book called Ship's Doctor, which is still out there as well, and I decided I'd try and write a book. And I wanted to write about the experiences of being on forestall through a deployment and return, and then a home port change to Pensacola, Florida. And these were all, I describe it as light bulbs on a Christmas tree. This isn't the Christmas tree, it's pretty stable. It's the bulbs that get on there that are little episodic events that happened along the way that are memorable, and you can see what's going on.
You have mentioned several departments in your book and in your navigating through the history. One is the Navigation Department, Operations Department, Engineering, Supply Department, all of those different things, including Religious Ministries Department. Is that a common thing? I'm not going to say common, but is it something that was particularly of interest to you, the Religious Ministries Department?
We interacted with the Religious Ministries Departments a lot. All of them required a lot of interaction and ongoing effort. And leadership on an aircraft carrier is very personal and in its own way intimate at some times where you just got people and you got to know what's going on with them, particularly for the medical officer, senior medical officer, and the senior chaplain, who basically have a requirement to know all the people on the ship at some level.
You also have mentioned the officers, of course, on the main deck, and really it's a kind of a step-by-step through the different divisions and introduction to the process of living on a carrier. What do you think the reader is going to find in reading this that they may not know, besides someone like me who is, you know, not really that familiar with aircraft carrier and the chain of command?
They're going to know how complicated it is because it's just complicated on aircraft carriers. There's lots of people, lots of things have to be done. You'd like to make sure they're all done right, and that doesn't always happen, but it's just a very complicated process, and things happen, and you wish they hadn't happened, but there's nothing you can do about them. I mean, our schedule changed all over the place, and that's the biggest thing that drives the ship is the schedule. And medical is even worse because things happen in medical that require everybody in the ship to do something. For instance, if you're a shipping company and they have a a crash on board, or somebody gets hurt on a destroyer and company, you got to go over and pick this guy up, bring him back to the aircraft carrier, stabilize him, see what you can do about him. And the whole battle group gets involved in that pretty quickly. The air boss gets involved, the CO gets involved, the operations people get involved, and working your way through that. So it's a very complicated process. It has a lot of lag times and lead times to try and get things done, and you just got to work those together. It's just the complexity of it is that you get into national defense, and you get into ship schedules, and ship's maintenance, and how much ship's maintenance are required. Then you get into ship's training of the people there, and make sure the ship's manned appropriately. So those are all parts that had to be done that are very complicated. It's not just a simple little event. It's a big event.
Now, as a medical officer, did you share any of those personal stories about personnel and injuries and recoveries and those types of stories?
I did. I did a lot of that, actually. We were an all-male crew until we went to Pensacola, and we were doing operations up in the Atlantic, and we had a young lady medevac over to our ship because she was suicidal. I had taken a bunch of pills for suicide.
Wow.
So that we brought her over, and we had 4,800 male sailors and one female sailor, which was interesting, but she just really needed to be taken care of, had a complicated history. I mean, she did reasonably well. She wouldn't take that much Tylenol. She overdosed on Tylenol, but she was an interesting patient. We talked about other patients. We had a gentleman who was the bosun. He was a warrant officer up in the deck department, and he had been a lot of drinking in his younger age. Basically, he had shot his liver and wasn't functioning anymore, and he was starting to have bleeding problems, and we removed him from the ship because he was just too complicated for the ship. He died about 8 months later when he started to have a bleeding.
Ouch.
And died. We couldn't take care of him.
Ouch. Ouch.
We had a gentleman named Conway Uderbeck, Fireman Conway Uderbeck, and he is an interesting guy because he was killed by his roommate. You can go to the web and you can look up Conway Uderbeck, and I'll point right there. There's all kinds of stuff about him. He was a fireman whom I knew because you wandered around and you talked to people a lot. And he was just one of those guys you talked to a lot for reasons that don't make any sense. But anyway, he basically went to Atlanta from Pensacola with two friends, shipmates of him, and they killed him. And then he went back. He stayed there. They went back to Pensacola, said he didn't come back. And we looked for him for a couple of months. And then they found his body, and we had to go back through that whole process. And one of the guys that killed him was electrocuted or poison gas 4 or 5 years ago.
Wow.
It really took a long time to go through this whole process. And a very tragic thing, very tragic for his parents. The reason I got involved with that is when you're a senior medical officer, there's a list every day of people that are UA or unauthorized absence or deserters, and he got his name on there because he was not found. You know, and I had enough interaction with him thinking, well, he just didn't seem like the kind of kid that wouldn't come back to work in the Navy, and then I found out why. So it's an interesting case that I sort of, and he's in the web. You know, Conway Uderbeck, if you look that up on the web, you get a whole bunch of information, including the Atlanta Constitution's write-up of his in dying.
Wow. How tough were the dating rules? That's something that I guess we would all assume are active in military, but how complex is that on a ship?
It was very simple for our commanding officer. Said no dating within the lifelines, period. You know, and I'll be the first to tell you that there were people dating on the ship, I think. I do think that.
Yes.
But if they had a problem with dating, it didn't become a division officer's job or a department head's job or the CEO's job to fix it. They shouldn't have been dating, and that was the end of that discussion. Keep your mouth shut, otherwise you're going to be go to mass for violating commanding officers. So it didn't, okay? It calmed a lot of things down. We did have some interesting dating events, which I talk about in the book. The Shaft Alley is one of those. We have the aircraft carrier has four shafts that turn the screws and make the ship go around.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, for some reason that didn't make a lot of sense, a couple, a man and woman, and two sailors decided that the Shaft Alley down there was a remarkable place, was romantically very remarkable, and got involved in a sexual event, I guess, and that's kind of rumor about that whole thing. I wasn't there.
Sure.
But anyway, that was one of those interesting things that you looked at and went, well, that was interesting. The problem with that is the ship has a video, a closed circuit TV process of the shafts They're basically painted half white, half gray. And if you count the number of times they turn, you can get an estimate of the speed of the ship. So it's one of the damage control things. So that's why they were found. Somebody was watching the video and said, that's not a good thing. But I think they were allowed to have finished up, and then they were escorted off by mastered arms.
I would say that would be an oops. You'd think they would know not to participate in a broadcast situation for sure.
Well, they were romantically overwhelmed. I mean, it's just one of those things like, okay, and it shouldn't have happened. I'm just joking about that it was an event.
Yep.
We had no dating on the ship, and that was important, actually.
Yeah, I have a close friend who's a pharmacist, and I noticed there, I'm sure that in those confines, meds and medical types of events were important. The medications and pharmacy on board, how important is that? And were there incidences that you also outline on board that perhaps might be a surprise?
They were very careful about that. First of all, narcotics were a very big issue, and they were pretty tightly controlled, and you couldn't do anything with them. And the person that prescribed the most narcotics was actually the oral surgeon on board. He, because of the pain from jaw surgery, put out a fair amount of narcotics. Basically, anybody on narcotics had to be taken off the ship and put in the medical ward because they weren't real safe to be that covered up with medication. They really had to be able to take care of themselves. So we didn't have that big a problem with medication. We had a lot of problem with some of the other things, those other things weren't that big a thing.
The fact that it was an aircraft carrier, at least the photo on the front of that, were there accidents that took place on a regular basis, or was it rare, or how would you describe that incident of accidents?
They were episodic, but they happened, and they were. The challenge was they were always about 5 minutes away from happening. And I actually took the time when I wrote the book, to include a lot of events, the crashes in the past. We did not include the Forrestal Fire, which was back in 1967, and 230 some sailors died in that event.
Wow!
But ships. There's a number of cases in there where the ships, because just the danger involved. All the potential for aircraft mishaps and ship mishaps and ships running into each other. There's just a lot of potential for anything like that, and you just have to be ready for it. You also get the point where you can have an aircraft that gets put on the catapults and launched down the rails, and it doesn't get to go fast enough, and it hits in the water, and that's called a cold cat shot. We had, I was out flying, logging some flight time in an H-3 when that happened on Forrestal in Pensacola, and we had one guy got out, and I got to take care of him, and he was pretty normal. The other guy was a couple of hundredths of a millisecond later, and he died.
Ouch.
And this was in Pensacola doing things. So it's a very dangerous business. The normal aircraft carrier tour is 2 years for senior medical officer, and you expect about 10 people dead.
Amazing.
Very dead people.
Yes. 400 pages. Now, all of the events in here transpire from your time in the service, or you mentioned just one of a large fire that took place back in the 60s. Do you recount other stories in addition to your time in the military there?
Some of the times I added things before and afterwards that were similar. We had a case where Forrestal shot down one of our E-2s. Basically, they had an engine fire. Everybody jumped out. And then the aircraft was going towards Syria, and so they went and actually shot it down.
Wow.
That was okay. They didn't like doing that, but that's okay. The next thing that happened about a year and a half later, the E-2, and this was off Theodore Roosevelt, was out doing flying at night to doing radar air control stuff, and basically lost the bubble and crashed, and everybody was gone. And the code for that is Lima, because they were just lost at sea. We also had 3 or 4 years before we got to the Med, the A3D, the all three dead airplanes were being used for things with sea control issues and intelligence gathering, and one of those crashed as well. That was on Nimitz. And so there's history in aircraft carrier crashes, and I included some of those to kind of broaden things out, because things may not happen at all. Everything may be fine, but in 5 minutes, they can be a lot worse. And so you just live in this world of knowing that things can go real bad real fast.
Constant preparation is what you're describing. Yes. There. When you began to write this had the idea, the concept of sharing these stories, who was your audience? Do you feel like this is one book or one account that will be of interest to everybody, or how would you describe that?
I think it'd be most interest to people who would like to understand aircraft carriers and by Navy ships as well, how they function. It's important because we have the Ford over in the Med right now. We've got the Ike over there as well. And this is, this is 30 years since I wrote the book or started on the book and had things. And yet it's still very pertinent. And I have no doubt that both Ike and the Ford have went through the process of describing the book about getting people ready and getting the ships ready maintenance-wise. It just takes a huge amount of planning and money to keep those aircraft carriers running around to do that. But as I said, with Ford and Ike, that's the first thing everybody asks is, where's the aircraft carriers? And I don't know whether they sent Ike out early or kept the Ford there afterwards, but they're still there, providing a deterrence right in the Med, which is what they need to be doing.
Fascinating book. You've included some wonderful chapter headings and stories in this book, I think a variety of things. Would you also say you've included some humorous activities or things that have taken place other than the romantic venture?
Oh, yes. Ships have their own experiences that can be quite funny or quite problematic, but you kind of work your way through them. Some of them were just little things that were there for good or bad.
Well, fabulous. Well, thank you for sharing your story and your history and your life in this book titled Of Ships and Sailors. My guest author, Dr. Bruce K. Bunker. Thank you, sir, for being a part of today's program. Where can we get copies of this?
It's still being published. You can go on Amazon and get it.
Excellent. Excellent. And they can do a search under the name of the book or under the title Of Ships and Sailors, or the author, Bruce K. Bunker, B-O-H-N-K-E-R. Dr. Bunker, thank you for sharing your story with us today. And hopefully, we'll maybe get to talk again in the future. Do you have another book that's maybe churning inside of your creative mind?
Actually, I might. That's one of I actually had the follow-on tours in this whole book.
Oh, fabulous.
Some other experiences later on in my career. But I decided this one to just talk about the time on Forrestal.
Fantastic.
Very limited.
Well, so, listeners, do a search under the author's name, Captain Bruce K. Bunker, B-O-H-N-K-E-R. You'll find this book and others that may come out in the future. I know you've done a lot of writing from a technical standpoint, not sharing just these kinds of stories, but also your technical expertise. Thank you again for sharing time with us today. My pleasure visiting with you.
My pleasure as well.
For Ex Libris On Air, this is J. Douglas Barker.